see here, where was I? Am I hooked up?
Not hooked up yet.
She says it's easier, she just do it.
Okay.
All right.
So, let's see here. What else do we want to know about? So what do you need to know to grow this garlic? Like what types of skills and knowledge, special knowledge you need to have to do it right?
Somebody that's done it before and teach you. There's no books. There's trial and error. And you have to keep trying, and you're gonna get knocked down. But then you readjust and figure out what you did wrong and try again. Mm-hmm. But we've got it down now. Pretty soon we're going to both be wealthy men, Calvin and I both. Big elephant farmers. Mm-hmm. And we just got to have the faith farming too. Got to have faith. And we got it. And
can you talk about some of the struggles you've had trying to, like, anybody, a small-time farmer?
We noticed something eating on the garlic, and every book you read says nothing to eat garlic. You can actually use it as a deterrent on insects. But something's eating it, so we take it over to the IFA station. You familiar with that? Yeah. It's on Interstate 10. It's associated with the University of Florida. They do all kind of farm research. So we took a hurt garlic plant in there, and it took them about 3 days. And they called me back and said, you've got thrips. There's two kinds, brown and black. Black's the worst. I said, which kind have I got? He said, you got the black. And we had to figure out some kind of organic poison that would kill them. And we found it. And it's working very good. And another insect that got us was fungus gnats. That's something you won't read in any book. Calvin spotted that and said that garlic's not happy. This was 20 years ago. And the fungus gnat, any kind of standing water, she lays her babies in there, nymphs, and then that's what eats the garlic. They come out and will attack, go down into the mouth of the garlic, and little needle mouths suck the juices out of the baby leaves, and slowly your plant will literally die if you don't stop it. So those were two insects that we had to figure out, but we've got those down now. So we write everything down, and hopefully, and we've got, how many, I'd say 4 or 5 farms now. Turkey Hill, they got garlic from us. Full Earth Farm, they got garlic from us. It all started right here. And now there's probably 7 or 8 farmers in this area, tri-state area, growing garlic as a cash crop. So it's very positive that it can help the small farmer and keep a mom and pop type farm going.
Is this the only way you make your living?
I was a landscaper. I had money coming in. My wife had a regular job. And that helped. Now we're both retired and getting a little money from that. And that helps. And what was the question?
I guess I'm trying to get at is, can you do this full time? Or
If you've got a market. Now 96% of the garlic grown in America is grown out in Gilroy, California. And they are just south of San Francisco. That's way north. If you go on the latitude, you're way up there around Virginia, New York. Garlic likes to grow in hotter condition. And that's why it does so well in the Deep South, because that's its natural growing environment. So I see that eventually that there will be a market for this, because it's just better garlic. And people now are eating more and more garlic. It's not taboo like it was 30 years ago when I first got in. Garlic, that's for ethnic, that's for poor people, that's for foreigners or whatever. We all used to eat it in this country. It was growing in all the old homesteads here. You'll find it where old abandoned farms, you'll find a patch of this garlic growing where they had it. But when we got too smart to eat it and started eating frozen food and canned food, we got away from it. But now we're going back to it. And it's just a wonderful thing to flavor food with. And it tastes good, to me anyway. You like it, don't you, Amanda? There we go. And
well, how's it different from other garlic?
It's, I'm going to get a little scientific on here. Because it's the oldest garlic, it knows what bacteria to attack, bad bacteria to attack in your digestive tract. It's, when they give you antibiotics, you kill all your bacteria in your digestive tract, which has led to major problems, health problems in this country. This garlic will keep your digestive tract clean unless you just enjoy going and getting a colostomy. This is the thing you want to be eating, because I have seen it. People who had huge amounts of polyps get on the garlic, go take a colostomy 3 or 4 years, no polyps. It will heal your digestive tract. Plus, it keep you from getting the flu. My wife taught school for 28 years and never missed one day. And I would make her, if she felt bad, I'd make her garlic honey or garlic tea. Garlic honey is another story. You can take this garlic and infuse it with honey. I like to use Tupelo. And the honey will actually take on the power of the garlic. And then when you taste the honey, you'll taste the garlic in it. But it's like a cough syrup, and it works. It works. It'll kill viruses and flu viruses and unwanted vampires. Keep the vampires. Well, that's my theory. That's where that came from, where the plague was back in Europe. If you had garlic hanging in your house, you didn't die from the plague. And the vampire story was just something, the folklore, to explain why everybody was dying left and right. The vampire got them, but it was the plague. And the seven thieves vinegar, that's another story. In France, there was people all over the cities dying, piled up. But somebody was robbing the graves, the bodies. And they couldn't catch them. And finally they did catch them. And they said, okay, how are you being able to walk out here and not catch the plague and rob everybody? And well, they said, we're not talking. And then they said, okay. And then they waited and waited. Okay, we'll talk. They were putting garlic in the bottom of their shoes and in their feet, with their feet, and hanging it around them. And that way they were protected. It's known as seven thieves vinegar. So they would put it in a vinegar too and drink it.
So we'll come back to some of the health benefits in a minute, but can you take us through the economics of growing this? Like, how much do you have? Who do you sell to? Where are the markets?
Markets, we sell to organic grocery stores, the New Leaf, Tomato Land when it was there. You remember Tomato Land? Oh yeah, that was a great place. And right now we sell mostly with people order it and come and get it. Like Calvin called this morning, some lady, is it ready yet? Is it ready? Calvin says, no, why not? Yeah, we can't control what Mama Nature says is ready. But people want it, and they call us and ask us for it. And then I sell a lot in the mail. I have customers, repeat customers. And it's no problem selling it.
Do you have a website?
Not activated. Yeah, I've got a, I don't sell on it yet. I got a garlicpearls.com, yeah. But .tds is the technical term.
Because I was wondering how some of these people find you.
Well, I've been growing it a long time. They know, you know, the Garlic Man. That's one of my names, the Garlic Man. And they just call and order it and say, I want 50 pounds now, don't forget me. Yeah, and then they sell it to, or give it away or however they're going to do it.
How far away are these people? Your customers?
They go from South Florida to California to New York. Sell in all those three places. It's easy to mail. You just UPS it or send it through the United States mail. And it's easy to ship. So that's good.
Is it mostly restaurants or mostly individuals?
Individuals. Now, I've sold the restaurants too, but now it's just individuals. I keep it as low-key as I can because I'm not as mobile as I used to be. But it's,
I'm wondering how they're using 50 pounds of garlic.
Well, they're giving their daughter 10 pounds, and they're giving their, you know, they divide it up.
How long does it last?
It'll last right through the year. It'll last 9, 10 months, 11 months. It has a long shelf life. You just keep it out of the direct sun. It doesn't like that when you're storing it. You want to store it in airy, dark condition.
Why did you choose to stay organic?
Because I've seen what chemical fertilizers do to the land, and you can't just keep taking and taking. You've got to give something back, and that's the beauty of farming with compost. You're giving something back, and cover cropping, you're giving something back. You're not just taking.
Is the way that you farm today different than the way your parents did?
Night and day. You know, it's completely different. The organic farmers were considered communists at the beginning, 30 years ago. We were called Appalachian Farms when we first started out here. And were one of the charter members of FOG, Florida Organic Growers. And had to submit to all kind of tests, and nobody really knew what organic meant then, so you had to explain that it wasn't communism garlic. And but now everybody knows what organic means, and you can't stop it now. And that I feel very good about that, being a part of that movement.
Have you seen the market change over time? Can you talk about the changes?
It's become more, when the federal government got into the organic, it legitimized it. And more, not only the fringe society, members of the society were eating it, everybody wanted organic because it wasn't a hippie food, it was, people know what it is now. There's much more information about alternative farming and organic farming. And the children, about how good it is for the children not to have pesticides and herbicides.
So So you had to go through a certification process?
Oh, yes. Painful.
Can you talk about that?
It was a very thorough, I don't want to say examination, but inspection. And they were very respectful, but you have to open yourself to them and let them know your business. And once you get over that, it's nothing to it. It's just part of it. To be certified organic, you have to jump through some hoops. But it's worth doing. It's worth doing.
You said it's expensive.
It's like $500 to get your first certification. And, you know, to any small farmer, that's $500 is $500.
Do you think that it's difficult for a lot of people to get that certification?
Yes, because you have to have the land. If it's been farmed before and had chemicals, some of these chemicals, pesticides, stay in the dirt for 20 years, and they're going to find it in there, and you can't get certified. So you have to find your spot and then cover crop it and start preparing it, have the soil tested, and find out what's in your dirt and go from there. So it's different for individuals about how much trouble it is. If you've got the right land, it's a piece of cake. But if your land's been tainted, you have to go through a healing process and heal the land, which takes time.
Had your land been farmed?
No, it had been dormant. You know, all this land, it was pine trees for turpentine. That was like in the late 1800s. Then cotton, and then tobacco, and then they just dormant cattle. They let cattle graze it. And then you start the process of cover cropping and come back in and make sure none of the pesticides are still in the dirt and go from there. But the dirt will heal itself. Mama Nature is powerful. You just give her a little time and she'll right the ship. But you got to give her a little time and be patient. And that's the biggest part of farming is patience. And, of course, money. You've got to have a little money coming in. And the migrant labor was a big help, working them. But now we use family members and work local people as much as we can. And young people really like working in it. And we enjoy doing that too, exposing everybody we can to farming.
What's the name of it? I'm sorry, I don't know.
Appalachia Farms was all that, but we went out, we disbanded, and now we just farming, Calvin's farming, there's two fields over here. I'm farming this over here and on the other side of the creek. And we got out of the corporation. We had a corporation going. And after the Chinese flooded the market that time, we just kind of ran out of capital and had to catch our breath. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting back. And we've got the price up is the most important thing.
Can you talk about that? I don't think I got that on the camera. What happened and what happened with the price?
When we were growing it at the most largest period of the farm, the Chinese flooded the market with huge amounts of garlic coming in on the West Coast, dirt cheap. And that just crushed the small garlic farmers in this area trying to get established. Oh, after that, we had to regroup and catch our breath. And that's when we learned about the pearls. The pearls happen in this elephant garlic. A process that no book, nothing tells you how to do it, but if you leave the garlic in the ground, we found out the hard way because of drought and flood where we couldn't harvest. And then you just, the garlic comes back on its own. It's got its own clock in it. It knows when to sprout and when not to sprout. We noticed that some of the garlic was solid, like an onion, and we named it pearl garlic. And now we've figured out how to grow that garlic, which is more powerful than any garlic that we've ever grown. And we're real excited about that. And now we're getting that, refining that process, how to do that in a profitable process. And it's very exciting.
When did that come about?
That happened in the middle 90s, like 94.
Mm-hmm. And how did you end up on this location? Have you been here for the past 30 years?
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you get to this location?
My wife, I met my wife on a blind date, and she had bought land out here, because she wanted to own land, and I ended up here, out here in West Gaston County. I didn't know that I had relatives this far out, and found out I had a relative that was a preacher, a horseback preacher, that rode from East Point, down on the coast, all the way up to Bamers, Georgia, on horseback preaching. So I've got some roots out here, and it's garlic growing country. Garlic doesn't like red dirt. It likes sandy loam, well drained like most herbs. And that's what we got out here. And I told her at first, you can't grow anything out here. Where's the red dirt? You know, that's what you have up in Georgia. And over the years, I found out this is mighty fine dirt. And we're just still in a learning, learning process, and you're just kind of right here when we're in another phase of it. Come back in 4 or 5 years, and I'll tell you how it worked out. But we're in another phase now, growing this pearl garlic, and we're real excited about that.
How do you market this stuff? How do you get people to get on board with it?
Well, it kind of marketed itself when people started reading about garlic's medicinal properties, so it can lower your blood pressure, prevent diabetes, and people are more and more wanting local produce grown around their area, and that's what we've got too. So the customer base is there. We're just refining how to grow it in the most easiest way, and we're still learning.
So, are there any resources that you wish were available to small farmers in this area?
We're lucky with IFAS up there. We've got the University of Florida to help us with insects. Marketing skills, seminars on that would be probably the most positive thing. Helping market it would be the biggest advantage we'd have with help from the state. And they do some things. Okay, I got to take another little break here.
Sure.
I knew I shouldn't have had that second cup of tea.
No worries.
Where am I? Oh, you should go on a hoop in here.
Oh.
This is a gold pan. Oh, yeah. That's what you put, river rock, what sort, and then shake it like that. That's kind of what farming is. You need a gold pan. That's right. It's a gamble.
It's a gamble.
See, the gold catcher.
It sure is.
Have you ever tried to do any of that around here?
Not around here. Up in the mountains, I tried.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found a little bit, not much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It catches it on those ridges.
Uh-huh. Up in Dahlonega. Where'd they make this thing? USA. How about that? All right, Miss Amanda.
All right, so just a few more, and I've kind of, we're wondering what advice you might give anybody who wants to start doing a small-scale farm in Gadsden County in the future?
Have a little bit of money to start. Don't be desperate. Desperate farmers run into trouble. So try to have you a little bankroll and go to it. Mm-hmm. There's a fine way to make money farming, to be able to grow something in the dirt and then have somebody look at it and say, that's beautiful, and then take it home and eat it. It's a win-win deal. But having something that you, good food is part of it too. And, I mean, just to make money is good. I mean, I'm a capitalist, but you want to have a product, and food is very important. That's clean, wholesome, and you want to see a small child eat it, and it's just an amazing thing. I grow these satsumas too, and you see a little four-year-old peel that orange and just light up and eat it, and he just wants it. He wants that, what's in that orange. So that's all very positive. Mm-hmm. Very positive.
Now, I'm not quite sure I got your story, and I know that Holly wanted me to get it on camera. Your story about finding out about the garlic from Africa. Can you talk about that again?
Yes, that's up in southeast Alabama, and in a very, very rural area. I was up there going to Cottonwood, to the hot springs. They have a hot springs in Cottonwood, Alabama. And oh, it's a wonderful place. And on the way up there, on the back road, was this little house with a very well-kept yard, all raked. Small, small house, and a beautiful black lady up on the front porch in a white linen dress. I'd always wave to her, and she'd wave to me when I'd be going up to the hot spring. Finally, I stopped in there one day to ask her after I noticed that she had a beautiful patch of the elephant garlic growing in her backyard. And at that time, I only knew the elephant garlic was coming from California. And I knew this old lady had not ordered fancy garlic, gourmet garlic, from a seed house on the West Coast. So I talked with her for a minute, told her who I was and where I was from. We talked about the weather. And then I asked her, where did you get your beautiful garlic? And she looked at me again and made sure I wasn't with the government, and looked me right in the eye and said, Lord, child, my mama's mama brought that over here on the crossing. And hair went up on the back of my neck, and I knew then that this was the old ancient garlic. And I'd heard a year earlier or so, watching an old farm show up in Dothan, Alabama, with Gene Reagan. He'd come on at noon, I'd be in there having a sandwich or something out of the field. Gene would wear this little cowboy hat and tell you the farm report and how hogs are doing and everything. And he said he was excited because he had the garlic king coming in today to talk after he gave the commodity news. And I said, the garlic king, I got to see him. And so this gentleman showed up, and he was in his late 60s, early 70s, and had an old Colonel Sanders goatee. And old Gene could tell he liked him, and he said, you still growing your garlic? And he said, yeah, I've got it going up there. And he was a big proponent, saying that it was a great crop for small farmers in this area. And I said, well, I can't believe this. You know, they're growing it up there too. And he said that the Indians told him that it was the only thing the white man brought that was worth a damn, was this garlic. But the garlic king said it too. He said the white man didn't bring it. He said the slaves brought it. You know, the white man had the ship, you know, but it was the slaves that brought the garlic, which came from North Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
the oldest garlic on the planet, right there. You can take these pearls that we're growing and cut them in half, and you'll see the shape of a spade. A spade is Arabic architecture. That was another clue that this is some kind of different garlic. So this isn't just regular garlic, this is the garlic. And now we're in that process of learning more and more about how to grow this old ancient garlic.
So that's fascinating.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. So before we talk to Calvin, can you tell us how you first met Calvin?
Calvin, what came over, Adrian Fletcher is an old-timey farmer. His nickname was Peaches. He grew peach trees, tobacco. He was a big tobacco farmer. And he rented us the tobacco barn. And Calvin worked for him, too, when he was real little. Calvin had been working in the field since he could run. And he came by there on his bicycle and said, "Have you got any work in there?" And, "Yeah, come on in. We got plenty of work." And that was it. Calvin and I have been friends ever since, and I couldn't have done it without him. And he is an awesome worker. And I've learned from him, and he's learned from me. And we are excited about being in this position that we're in. And he's working his children in it. And we just keep on keeping on.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. So we'll unhook you, and we'll hook up.
We'll hook Calvin up.
Yeah.
Did I do okay?
You did awesome.
Thank you. I hope I did okay. I didn't realize my hand started jumping. You got the camera on
you,
you know.
Oh, can you get that? I think I lost my screen in there, up under your shirt.
About right.
Oh, no. Where'd it go?
There it is.
Thank you. Okay.
Ooh, my first time.
Yep.
Well, you can go
through
the button.
And we'll just, when we go to walking and talking, we'll unhook you from this. But I want to ask you a few questions here. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, Calvin can show you some flowers, too.
Oh, yeah,
and how the pearls don't flower.
That's right.